Herman is our guest. Bill Russell, you were about to say something, I think.
Well, you just sort of went past something a while back, something about the politics of beauty.
Thank you.
Yes.
And the beauty business.
Well, I just the politics of beauty, and then you went on, and I'm sitting here sort of trying to infer what that might be. But rather than me try to infer it, I would much rather hear you say what the politics of beauty is.
The politics of beauty is the perceptions that advertisers and magazines give us and sell to us. The dreams, the unattainable dreams and desires that they weave their magic into it. For example, the standard of beauty, it's still considered to be blonde and blue-eyed. And
Eurocentric.
Exactly. You become a little bit older, everybody is selling you some anti-wrinkle cream. I mean, so one is not comfortable at any given time, at any age. There's something wrong with you, and we can fix it. And if something is not really wrong with you, something is wrong, really wrong with you, then, you know.
Exactly.
Well, and we can fix it at a price.
Absolutely. But everything is about a price. So either you're too skinny, you're too fat. And everybody has become fat, and not just for the health reason, but because they can't fit in a size 2 or a 0. I don't know what a 0 is, because air probably is size 0. I have no idea. They lie to us women because you go and you buy a size 6, is actually an 8, because then they think that it makes feel our better. So it's all making constantly a self-esteem issue, whether it's about our weight, about our age, about our beauty, about our hair. It's a constant battle. And I think being a mother, it starts at home. If women really, and I think, not if, but I'll say, women really need to address, because I see it with my 5-year-old. Whatever I say, of course, she picks it up. So if I bring my neuroses home, I'm too fat, my hips are this, I'm always picking on myself and nothing saying anything good about myself. That's what she'll pick up.
That's also stunningly self-obsessive, which is probably not good for a kid either.
Absolutely.
You know, she should go outside and play and pick up the trash on the side of the street and make the world a better place.
Exactly.
You
know? And we were talking about her with her yesterday, because she said, we were showing her this beautiful book from China, huge book that we got as a present. And we were going through, and she saw a picture of a woman, and she said, she looks poor. She's never used that word before. She looks poor. And I said, why is she looks? She said, because she looks like a girl that we pass by the park every day. And she said she was my color skin, and then she thought it was her color skin between me and her. And she's trying to describe her. And as we told her, you know what poor really means? She said she doesn't have a place to stay. That's why she's at the park all the time, yes. And she started to well up and cry. And I said, well, that's empathy. You know, but I do take her to kitchens, because I do that on Thanksgiving. You know, and I'm one of those people that I don't like, just because I'm going to do something, take a crowd with me or a photographer with me so that they can. You know, it's actually more for her to see it, that you really need to do this. Because empathy is good enough. Giving money is another thing, is good enough. But there are things you can actually do it, and it doesn't cost anything, and it will make you feel better and connected.
Well, and even if it doesn't make you feel better, it might be the right thing to do.
And it will make you feel better about and glad of what you've got.
Yeah.
You know, because she's set for life. That's one thing, you know, that people say to me, does she have designer clothes? I said, what the hell? She needs designer clothes. She's 5 years old. She's already privileged.
That's right. There's another piece to this that you address in The Color of Beauty, or The Beauty of Color, both of which are the case.
That's why it was intentionally so that it would go both ways.
You talk about the age of conformity in which we live. I grew up in the 50s.
Yes.
And I remember the fear and the conformity. I grew up in the United States in the 50s. And what the 60s felt like was breaking some of that conformity. And then we went back to it in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s are just kind of nuts. But this notion, and again, it comes with beauty, that somehow you have to look like somebody else. And the peer group pressure that does not stop with adolescence.
Mm-hmm.
The notion that you always have to be other.
Yes, not yourself, other. that there's something wrong with you.
But now help me with this, because here you are, the proverbial, the essential supermodel, and you are there portraying that against which it sounds you are now being reactive.
No, I've always been reactive. My services as a model was exactly as anybody said. I mean, I had no control of what the magazines and everything, but it does. Do you know what I mean? It's a business that really starts with the advertisers. And people think also it's just advertisers and the magazine editors. It's not that. It's the consumer. Consumer still says, you know, there's too much paparazzi, there's just too much this, there's too much that. Well, don't buy it. You know, don't feed into it. Don't buy it. You don't have to. Do you know what I mean? So in a way, for me, my major service as a model was actually cutting the barriers down for us black models. Because if nobody of us will go into none of those other ones, the Naomi Campbells, the Tyra Banks, all those girls who are out there now who are superstars won't be there. Obviously, I didn't start it because there were a lot of other black models, who, however little they got then, who opened the door. I kicked it open, but they opened it. Do you understand? So it took. So I had a place and a service for what I was doing.
And at the time in 75, it was still just, if not beyond rare, it was so unusual to see a woman whose skin color was not European.
Oh, absolutely. Christie Brinkley was the ideal beauty.
Yeah. And anybody else was just not admitted to the party. One of your models talks about Dorothy Dandridge, who had such a sad life.
I know.
The Lena Horns of the world.
Yes.
There were an occasional African-American, Puerto Rican.
Yes.
You talk about, I was just amazed. I didn't know Raquel Welch was half Bolivian.
Exactly.
Well, that door had to be kicked pretty hard.
Exactly. Because just not to sound bitter, because I'm not, the industry really does not change. Our industry doesn't change. It's the same thing now as it was then. What changes is the zeitgeist and the culture changes. You know, and then they see, oh, there's money to be made. Okay, let's get into it. You know, that's it. They know their bottom line, so to speak, you know. And they still, American Vogue says, is still, when they put a black girl on the cover, the sales dip. Now, you know why? Because they always put them on the months that don't sell anyway. They put them on January and July. At the slowest months, no.
So it becomes self-fulfilling.
Self-fulfilling prophecy. Exactly. And they're always blaming. I said, well, if you put Oprah on January, tell me that won't sell.
Yeah.
You know, it will sell, of course, but you know, it doesn't make any sense. So.
Oprah is an interesting example of this, because having watched Oprah's career over the last 30 years, really, to watch a very talented young woman who was willing to crash through doors, and to watch her physical changes through the course of that, and yet she always kept a certain centeredness.
Absolutely.
Is that part of what your success has been?
Mine, it's a combination of things. I have insisted on my integrity, and I've insisted on my worth. I was fortunately raised in Somalia, East Africa, by a father who was a diplomat and a mother who was a doctor, and I was always told, oh, I'm a Muslim, and a lot of people think Muslim women are not educated. We are. And a lot of people, Muslim women, people think that Muslim women were not given the opportunities. We are. And that we are thought of in our societies less than a man. That's not true. My father always told me that the sky is the limit for me, and whatever I wish and desire, I can get it. But he said, for one thing, never, never take less, because if you accept less, you will be less. And so in that mentality, I came to the United States and I applied that same, the thing I was raised with in our business. I refused till I got the same pay that the Caucasian models were getting in 1975. Otherwise, I said, I don't need it. I don't need to do this. To belittle myself, to feel myself, I'm lesser than them, and I'm doing the same services. So I think those are that and mystery. I'm a Muslim girl in the way that too much is too much. You should know privacy, and you should know your family is sacred and should be private. Nobody, no photographers, no press is allowed near my child or my home. People ask me, where are your children? And I say, because they can have their own life and not be Iman's daughters or David Bowie's. They should have their own life. They should be able to grow up and think that they can be somebody on their own without the attachment.
I want to go away for a minute and come right back. And yes, Bill, you get almost the next chance. I'm Paula Gordon. Bill Russell will be able to join this conversation.
I stand no chance here.
He did say that. That was going to happen.
Unless I just turn off your mics.
No, don't do that. Iman is our guest. The three of us will be back in a moment. We trust you'll be with us, too.